Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Tuesday, December 4th, 2018. Coming up this hour.
Global stocks slide as questions surface about the U.S.-China trade truce.
Fixed income's in focus as a section of the U.S. yield curve inverts for the first time in a decade.
And oil heads for its biggest two-day advance since June as supply glut concerns ease.
It's President George H.W. Bush's last time in Washington. Plus, Special Counsel Mueller will reportedly release major new details in the Russia probe. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower on sports. Home losses for the Knicks, Nets, and Devils. The Eagles beat the Redskins in Monday Night Football.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit SectorSPDRS.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF.
Stocks are falling around the world as investors rein in optimism over trade. 6:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 9 points this morning. Dow futures down 104. NASDAQ futures down 32. The DAX in Germany is down 0.6%. CAC in Paris down 0.5%. FTSE 100 down about the same. Nikkei 225 in Japan fell 2.4%. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong up 0.3%. 10-year Treasury up 4/32, yield 2.95%. The yield on the 2-year 2.81%. NYMEX crude oil up 2% or $1.06 to $54.01 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.4% or $5.20 at $12.44.80 an ounce. The euro $1.1407 and the yen 112.77. Nathan.
Karen, the dollar is weakening sharply after two sections of the Treasury yield curve inverted for the first time in more than a decade. The spread between 3- and 5-year yields fell into negative territory. The 2- to 5-year gap soon followed. We get more from Bloomberg Markets reporter Wes Goodman.
It's a warning sign, and the concern is that that's a taste of things to come, which would, of course, be a flattening of the broader yield curve, which signals a recession ahead. You know, it doesn't mean a recession's right around the corner. There can be a lag of several months. But, you know, it is a warning that people look at.
And the spread between 2- and 10-year Treasury yields is flattening as well, right now separated by just 14 basis points.
That is investors doubting how much longer the Federal Reserve will keep raising interest rates. Paul Krugman is a Nobel Prize-winning economist and professor at the City University of New York.
If I was Fed Chair, I'd be pausing until we had clear a sequence of inflation numbers that were above 2% at the minimum.
And euro-dollar futures currently show traders expect just 0.25-point rate hike next year.
Meantime, confusion is surfacing over the details of that trade truce between the U.S. and China, with officials offering few details on the agreement. Bloomberg Daybreak editor Christine Burke reports.
There is more and more skepticism that's arising around these supposed agreements. The White House has not provided any additional information on Trump's claims that China would cut that 40% tariff on U.S. cars coming into the country. China's foreign ministry declined to comment on any changes. On top of that, we saw top economic advisor Larry Kudlow. He kind of dialed things back a little bit. And what he said was that the deals are more so just commitments, stuff that they're going to look at and presumably implement. So it just seems like you really can't take at face value these deals.
Well, we have heard from the White House, but Beijing so far has been quiet. That's because bureaucrats in China are awaiting the return of President Xi Jinping and his senior officials before taking action. Right now they're in Portugal. They'll be there till tomorrow before heading back to Beijing.
And that's left traders wondering what's ahead. Raj Shant is Global Equities Portfolio Manager at Newton Investment Management.
U.S.-China trade deal is probably the wrong word. As with a lot of things with President Trump, it's really hard to work out what's really going on underneath all this noise.
Still, we have word of one move from China. It's stepping up punishment of intellectual property violations, with culprits now subject to a total of 38 different punishments. IP theft has been one of the main points of contention in the trade dispute.
All the skepticism over the trade truce made a dent in Asian stocks today, with equities in Japan taking the brunt of the sell-off. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally has more from Singapore. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. Japanese stocks fell the most since October 25, snapping seven sessions of gains on yen strength and a loss of risk appetite. The Nikkei 225 closed lower in Tokyo by 2.4%. Chinese equities staged a comeback in late trade, while the yuan continued to rise against the dollar. Elsewhere, the ASX 200 in Sydney fell 1%. South Korea's Kospi slid 0.8%. And Indian stocks snapped their longest run of gains in 4 months, weighed down by higher oil prices. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Juliet, thank you. Oil headed for its biggest two-day advance since June. Supply glut concerns are easing amid optimism that OPEC and its allies will strike a deal to stabilize the market. At the same time, though, the Saudi oil minister says it's premature to say if the cartel will cut output. Checking prices now, NYMEX crude oil is up 2.2%, up $1.14 to $54.09 a barrel. Brent is up 2.2% at $63 a barrel.
In the UK, another setback for Theresa May. The Prime Minister's attempt to sell her Brexit deal to Parliament has been torpedoed before it even started, with lawmakers holding emergency debate over May's decision to withhold legal advice about her plan. We get more from Bloomberg's David Merritt in London.
It's hardly the start to this big five-day debate that she would have wanted. We're now just 1 week away from the big vote on December the 11th. It still seems like the odds are stacked against her, that it's going to be nigh on impossible for her to pass that vote. And considering all the debate we've had so far over the next 5 days, it's unlikely that any of these arguments are going to change anyone's mind again.
At the same time, the EU's top court is giving a boost to opponents of Brexit. The EU Court of Justice says the UK should be allowed to reverse its Article 50 notice. That's what triggered the Brexit process.
We have more signs of tepid iPhone demand, with Apple now employing market strategies it's rarely used. Sources tell Bloomberg the iPhone maker is reassigning marketing staff to work on discount promotions to help boost sales of its flagship device. One source describes the move as a fire drill and a possible admission that new iPhones may be selling below expectations. Shares of Apple are down 1.5% in early trading.
And Carlos Ghosn is facing likely rearrest in Tokyo. Japanese media say prosecutors plan to add a fresh claim that the former Nissan Motor chairman understated his income by more than previously reported. Meanwhile, Nissan's board is meeting to select Ghosn's successor. Futures on Wall Street pointing to a lower open. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg. And it's 6:07 on Wall Street. Michael Barr is here to tell us what's going on in the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. President Trump made a visit to the Capitol last night, where the body of former President George H.W. Bush lies in state. President Trump, accompanied by the First Lady, stood before the flag-draped casket in the rotunda and saluted the coffin. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter reports the week of remembrance of the 41st president has a common theme.
Humility, grace, and working together. At the rotunda of the Capitol, where President Bush lies in state, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell remembered the day of his inauguration.
He said, "We meet on democracy's front porch, a good place to talk as neighbors and as friends." The words of a humble servant who loved his fellow citizens and of a principled leader who knew America not only guards our own future, but also safeguards democracy for the world.
Today is a day of public respect. Tomorrow is a ceremony at the National Cathedral. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Special Counsel Robert Mueller is said to drop new details and tie up loose ends about three of the important players in the Russia probe. According to multiple media reports, prosecutors will file several new documents in court about ex-National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort, and Michael Cohen, former lawyer for President Trump. The Trump administration is defending the appointment of Matthew Whitaker as acting attorney general as completely lawful. Bloomberg's Nancy Lyons reports.
The selection of Matthew Whitaker, saying the president failed to follow the law and filling the vacancy created by the forced resignation of Jeff Sessions. The Trump administration has already asked a Baltimore judge to throw out the state's lawsuit on technical grounds. If the administration prevails, the judge will be unable to rule on the legality of the appointment. A December 19th hearing is scheduled to take up the case. In Washington, Nancy Lyons, Bloomberg Radio.
New York's Attorney General has opened an investigation into potential abuses by finance firms that offer quick money to small businesses nationwide. According to a person familiar with the probe, Attorney General Barbara Underwood's office is looking into whether merchant cash advance companies engaged in fraud. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. 6:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update brought to you by Investors Bank. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, Knicks and Nets both at home, both had chances to win. Neither did. Knicks led Washington by 9 at the half, but then got outscored in the third quarter, 34-19. The Wizards beat David Fizdale's Knicks 110-107.
We didn't run anything in that third quarter. Couldn't get us into any offense, and credit to them. They really took us out of our stuff. They turned up the defense, and they took that third quarter from us.
Tim Hardaway led the Knicks 20 points over in Brooklyn, a seventh straight loss for the Nets, beaten by one of the few teams below them in the standings, Cleveland, 99-97. The Cavs won it on an Alec Burks drive and slam dunk with 3 seconds left. D'Angelo Russell led the Nets with 30 points. Warriors ended a two-game road slide, 128-111 in Atlanta, 30 points for Steph Curry. Hockey at the rack. Devils took on the team with the most points in the NHL. Tampa Bay won going away 5-1. The Devils have lost 6 in a row. College hoops. Rutgers up 5 at the half, then lost by 5 at Wisconsin, 69-64. Monday Night Football saw Philadelphia beat Washington 28-13. This was a one-point game in the fourth quarter, and the Eagles then put it away. The Redskins, who recently lost starting quarterback Alex Smith to a serious knee injury, last night lost the backup Colt McCoy for the rest of the season with a broken leg. In came the former Jet, Eagle, and Cowboy Mark Sanchez. He becomes the starter. Both teams are 6-6. Both are a game behind Dallas in the NFC East. Big game Sunday with Philadelphia at Dallas. Presser at Citi Field today to welcome back to New York Robinson Cano, longtime Yankee, just acquired by the Mets in a trade with Seattle. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
And John, in other sports news, the Boston Red Sox have accepted an invitation to the White House to celebrate their World Series championship. It used to be a standard nonpartisan perk of winning it all, but the traditional champion's visit to Washington has become more politicized of late. Some teams have declined invitations from President Trump. In other cases, individual players stay home. Sox say it's up to players to decide whether they'll attend. This is Daybreak. Sports brought to you by Investors Bank. Business wins here. Connect your team with the experts at Investors Bank for business solutions to move your business forward. Investors Bank, banking in your best interest. Member FDIC.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks and U.S. stock index futures are tracking declines in Asia as investors rein in their optimism over any breakthrough in the trade war. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 7.5 points, Dow futures down 96, NASDAQ futures down 30, the DAX in Germany is down 0.6%. 10-year Treasury up 4/32, yield 2.95%, the yield on the 2-year 2.81%. NYMEX crude oil up 2.5% or $1.31 to $54.24 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.5% or $6.10 to $12.45.70 an ounce. The euro's at $1.1414, the yen 112.73. We get earnings from three companies in the S&P 500 today, including Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. With a preview, here's Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
The consensus is that sales likely grew 2% in the fiscal fourth quarter, bringing full-year expansion to 6%. Bloomberg Intelligence says HPE's cost-cutting plan, dubbed HPE Next, and its stock buyback program will likely be the key drivers of earnings growth in the new fiscal year, since sales are projected to rise just 1% in 2019. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Jeff, thank you. And Toll Brothers reported fourth quarter revenue that beat analyst estimates. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump came to the Capitol to pay tribute to late President George Herbert Walker Bush. Earlier, Democratic Representative Nancy Pelosi exchanged a warm hug with former President George W. Bush. The father of a man mistakenly shot by police in an Alabama mall says a private forensic investigation indicates that 21-year-old Emantic Bradford was shot 3 times in the back. Hoover police initially claimed Bradford, who they say was brandishing a handgun, was the shooter after a fight broke out that left 2 people wounded. A day later, police changed their story, saying Bradford likely did not fire the rounds that injured either victim. In the NBA, the Knicks lost to the Wizards. The Nets lost. The Warriors were winners. In the NFL, the Redskins lost to the Eagles. NHL action, the Devils lost. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. Coming up on 620 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak, and we're joined this morning by Alex Longley, a Bloomberg oil reporter in our London bureau. Nice to talk with you this morning, Alex, and I guess it's safe to say there's a fair amount of anticipation for this meeting coming up in Vienna with OPEC and its allies. We've heard from the Saudi and Iraqi oil ministers just this morning, and there have been quite a few moves in the price of crude, just on some of those comments.
Yes, certainly. And it's been a busy few weeks in the crude market anyway, falling like a stone. And then we seem to be staging recovery earlier this week. And the Saudi energy minister has just started to deflate that bubble a little bit. He's said that it's too early to talk about an OPEC agreement when they meet on Thursday, let alone an agreement with their allies when they meet on Friday. So we're seeing crude lose some of those early gains, but we're still up on the day. And that's because of those lows that we've come from. The dollar's weaker. OPEC still expected to make an agreement, but the Saudi energy minister just walking it back a little bit here.
So what's behind that comment from the Saudi oil minister saying it's too soon to say? What are the machinations going on here?
Well, as in the lead up to any OPEC meeting, there's still distance between most of the parties involved. And for the first time in a long time, it's the Saudis and the Russians who are furthest apart here. The Saudis want an output cut to help lift prices. Russia's Vladimir Putin has said in recent weeks that initially $60 was fine, and then when we fell to $50, he said that was fine as well. So the Russians not looking too eager to cut their output. And that's where these deliberations are finding a sticking point in the questions of who exactly is going to take what share of the output cuts that could be delivered at the end of the week. And remember, OPEC needs a unanimous decision, as it does with its allies, in order to effectively cut output or agree to cut output officially. So it's that stumbling block that if everyone can't get on board with prohibits the group, at least on paper, from cutting output. Of course, they could then just go and cut away to their heart's content on their own, but they wouldn't have the backing of their allies.
So then does Russia have outsized influence, do you think, on what OPEC decides?
Well, there was talk of Russia and OPEC formalizing their long-term cooperation. And we heard over the weekend that that plan had been put on the back burner because Russia once again said it was fine with how things are. And I think that kind of tells you a lot about the dynamic that we're seeing unfold at the moment, that the Russians are in the driving seat and there probably will be some kind of compromise, whether it's an outsized influence. I mean, you could argue that there are three major producers in the world producing record levels, Saudi Arabia, Russia and the US. So if that is that influence outside, well, probably not, because they are one of the world's most important oil producers. And that's something that's evolved over recent years. In reality, it's probably sort of the new norm in the oil market.
What influence, if any, does Alberta's decision this week to engage in pretty steep production cutbacks have on what OPEC might decide this week?
Well, there were many jokes yesterday morning that Alberta was going to become the next member of OPEC. We weren't expecting to see output cuts from outside of OPEC before the meeting. But that's what's occurred. And it is a big volume, 325,000 barrels a day. The problem with Canadian output and Canadian cuts is infrastructure. The reason these cuts have had to come about in Canada is because none of the crude can get out, and they're geared towards reducing Canadian inventories. So if you look at it on a spreadsheet point of view, where you're looking at global supply and demand, global supply will come down next year as a result of those Canadian cuts. But is it going to make a big difference to prices, to benchmarks? That's trickier to tell, because a lot of that crude wasn't getting out anyway, so it doesn't change the value of those barrels.
In less than a minute to go here, we know that there are always political differences among the members of OPEC. But when you have Qatar announcing that it's leaving and Iran this week warning of $40 a barrel oil if there isn't an agreement, how fractured is OPEC in your view?
I mean, that's part of the problem going into this meeting. In previous weeks leading up to the OPEC meetings, we've seen that usually it's been the Saudis and Iran that have had the disagreements. And really, the Saudis and Russians have been ready to sort of take a decision on the day of the meeting. This time round, Saudi Arabia and Russia are divergent. But also, it's still got to deal with the political issues. Qatar leaving the group early next year. What are they going to do? Iran not being happy with the way it's been treated within the group, and potential alliances between Iran and Iraq. Then on top of that, you've got Libya and Nigeria, who've had, you know, sporadic output levels over the last couple of years, trying to agree whether they're going to be part of cuts or not. So that's the complication for the group in the lead up to this meeting. There's a lot to work out in the next 48 hours.
Bloomberg oil reporter Alex Longley, thanks as always. Checking the price of Brent right now, it's up 2.5%, $63.26 a barrel. This is Daybreak. Brought to you by Land Rover. Visit your local tri-state area Land Rover retailer for special offers during the Season of Adventure sales event now through January 2nd. This is Bloomberg. Good morning.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. That China-U.S. trade truce rally appears to have stalled as Trump administration officials shed little light on the specifics of the agreement. U.S. futures and European averages are lower while stocks in Japan tumbled.
A section of the U.S. Treasury yield curve just inverted for the first time in more than a decade. The spread between 3- and 5-year yields fell to negative 1.4 basis points, dropping below zero for the first time since 2007.
Executives from Germany's biggest automakers head to the White House today. Bloomberg's Oliver Zonkow reports.
The executives of Volkswagen, Daimler, and BMW are trying to convince the White House not to slap tariffs on billions of dollars worth of cars that they ship from Germany. On the other hand, they don't want to be seen as negotiating, as only the European Union trade officials can officially do that. At stake are the company's long-term investment decisions in the U.S., something the White House and the companies both want clarity on. In Wolfsburg, Germany, Oliver Zachow, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Oliver, thanks. The pound is stronger after an advisor to the EU's top court said the UK should be allowed to reverse its Article 50 notice, which triggered the Brexit process.
Oil heading for its biggest two-day advance since June. Concerns over a supply glut are easing on hopes that OPEC and its allies will strike a deal to stabilize the market. At the same time, though, the Saudi oil minister says it's premature to say if the cartel will cut output. Checking oil right now, NYMEX crude up 2.2%. It's at $54.10 a barrel. Brent is up 2.3% at $63.14.
Cirrus Logic fell 6% in extended trading. The Texas-based chipmaker joined a growing list of Apple suppliers in cutting its revenue forecast for the holiday quarter.
Meanwhile, sources tell Bloomberg Apple is experimenting with iPhone marketing strategies it rarely uses, such as discount promotions via generous device buyback terms to help boost sales of its flagship product.
And marijuana producer Cronos Group has confirmed it's in talks about a potential investment by Altria Group. It's 6:32 on Wall Street. Time for the Volatility Index report. The VIX fell yesterday to close at 16:44. Separately, in today's extended morning trading, the VIX is currently at 16:75. That is this morning's Volatility report.
S&P futures lower, down 10 points. Dow futures down 116. NASDAQ futures down 36. The DAX in Germany is down 0.7%. The 10-year Treasury up 5/32nds, yield 2.95%. And the yield on the two-year, 2.81%. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. It's 6:33 on Wall Street. The news update is brought to you by Marks Paneth, LLP. Marks Paneth, accountants and advisors, have helped closely held and family businesses reach their goals for over 100 years. At Marks Paneth, success is personal. Learn more at markspaneth.com/success. Here's Bloomberg's Michael Barr. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Former President George H.W. Bush is now lying in state in Washington. President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump were among the mourners paying their respects last night. Bloomberg's Bob Moon has more on the formal tribute at the U.S. Capitol.
America, It's a homecoming of sorts to a building where he served 4 years in Congress and 8 years as President of the Senate. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell welcomed him back to a hallowed cathedral.
Today, this hero has returned to the Capitol a final time.
The casket carrying the remains of the 41st president rests in a place of honor, the Capitol Rotunda. Vice President Mike Pence is the current Senate president.
Americans from every corner of the country and every walk of life will make their way to this rotunda to pay the respects of a grateful nation.
Ahead of Wednesday's state funeral, Mr. Bush's remains will lie in state for House Speaker Paul Ryan, a tribute well-deserved.
Here lies a great man.
Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
According to multiple media reports, Special Counsel Robert Mueller is set to make an announcement about three important players in the Russia probe soon. It reportedly includes a sentencing memo for ex-Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort, and memos about former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and President Trump's former lawyer Michael Cohen. UK Prime Minister Theresa May has suffered yet another setback to her Brexit plan. Bloomberg's Rob Hutton reports from London.
Theresa May's attempt to sell her Brexit deal to sceptical members of Parliament was torpedoed even before it began last night, as opposition parties were granted an emergency debate into whether her government was in contempt of Parliament for refusing to publish the full legal advice on the agreement she wants to sign with the European Union. That debate will take place this afternoon, pushing back the start of the debate the Prime Minister is supposed to be leading on the deal, and illustrating before she even starts why she's on course to fail. There are simply more members of Parliament who are against her than support her. In London, Robert Hutton, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global news 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. 6:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, brought to you by Investors Bank. Here's John Stanshauer.
Nathan, the Knicks and Nets are both 8-17. They both lost last night at home. Knicks had a 9-point lead at the half, but fell to Washington 110-107. That's the Wizards' ninth win in a row at the Garden. At Barclays, Nets beaten by Cleveland 99-97. Brooklyn's seventh straight loss. The Devils' losing streak reached six. Tampa Bay won easily 5-1. College hoops, Rutgers lost at Wisconsin 69-64. Remember Mark Sanchez, quarterback the Jets to back-to-back AFC championship games? It's been a journey since leaving New York, with stops with every NFC East team except the Giants. He was just signed by Washington when Alex Smith went down. And then last night in Philadelphia, Colt McCoy broke his leg. The Eagles won 28-13. The Redskins will now, presumably the rest of the way, go with Sanchez.
I'm grateful for the opportunity. I was praying for an opportunity, and I thank God for the opportunity. You just never want it under these circumstances. So with respect to Alex and Colt, I got to do my very best to play well and help rally this team and figure out a way to win. And that's the ultimate form of respect, I think, for those guys, because your heart definitely breaks for them. They're great competitors and great people, and so you never want it under those circumstances, like I said, but you go out and you do your very best.
Giants will visit Sanchez and the Redskins on Sunday, when also Philadelphia, in a huge game, visits Dallas. The trade's official. The Mets have sent five players, three of them minor leaguers, to Seattle for Robinson Cano and Edwin Diaz, a return to New York for Cano. Eight-time All-Star, spent nine seasons with the Yankees. Diaz, only 24 years old, comes off a tremendous season as the Mariners' closer. He had 57 saves. For the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
John, thanks. It's 6:37 on Wall Street.
The following is from the Bloomberg View, the editorial page of Bloomberg Opinion.
When Jerry Brown returned to the governor's office in January 2011, California had a projected budget deficit of $27 billion. As he departs in January, Brown will leave a surplus of more than $29 billion, a figure the state's legislative analyst's office calls extraordinary. The same can be said of Brown himself. Brown made targeted cuts in state spending while increasing funds for education and health care. He deployed his political capital to raise taxes on the wealthy. He committed his state to 100% carbon-free power by 2045, the most ambitious target of any major economy. In his four terms as governor, Brown has been a nimble thinker and a prodigious doer. With the quality of leadership in Washington at an all-time low, Brown established Sacramento as a stark counterpoint. It's hard to imagine a better model for Governor-elect Gavin Newsom than the exceptional Jerry Brown. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg View Editorial Board. I'm David Shipley. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion. Or OPI and Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been the Bloomberg View.
You can hear Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time. 6:38 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg Green Report with Bob Moon.
George H.W. Bush was the first president to sign the U.S. onto a global climate deal, a modest effort recognizing the threat of climate change. And Bush oversaw changes to the nation's air pollution law in 1990, the last time Congress came together in a bipartisan way to make any significant changes to the Clean Air Act. Bush spoke of the responsibility to fulfill what he called our stewardship obligations.
We all know that human activities are changing the atmosphere in unexpected and in unprecedented ways.
His administration at times pushed back against what it viewed as overly costly environmental regulations.
But that responsibility demands that we do it right.
But the 41st president, who cut his teeth in the oil industry, left what some admirers see as an impressive legacy of environmental laws. He also signed the Oil Pollution Act of 1990, which set up a system for assigning liability for oil spills in the wake of the Exxon Valdez spill. That's the Bloomberg Green Business Report. I'm Bob Moon.
Thanks, Bob. And most of Wednesday's major economic reports have been postponed to Thursday due to the day of national mourning for the late President Bush. Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice reports.
The delay list includes the ADP employment report, ISM data on service industries, Labor Department figures on productivity, and IHS market PMI reports. They will all go out Thursday. The Federal Reserve will, however, issue its Beige Book economic survey as planned on Wednesday at 2 p.m. Wall Street time. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
And checking the markets on this Tuesday morning, they are headed lower with S&P futures down 9 points or 1/3%, Dow futures down by 114 or 0.4%. NASDAQ futures are 0.5% lower, 35 points decline. The price of the 10-year is up 4/32, the yield at 2.95%, 2-year treasuries at 2.81%. And checking oil prices this morning, NYMEX crude is up 2.1% or $1.13. $54.08 a barrel. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Listen to Bloomberg Radio tomorrow for full coverage of the funeral for former President George H.W. Bush at Washington National Cathedral. Our special programming begins at 10 a.m. Wall Street time tomorrow on Bloomberg Radio and Television.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and futures are lower this morning. Let's go to the First Word breaking news desk for today's morning call. Here's Bill Maloney. Good morning, Bill.
And good morning, Karen. That's right. U.S. futures are under pressure right now. Dow futures down 117 points. S&P's dropped 10, and NASDAQ futures declined by 36. The U.S. 10-year yield at 2.96%. Oil is trading higher, and Japan dropped 2.4% overnight. Well, European markets are also under pressure, led by declines in Spain. Back in the U.S., nothing to report on the economic front. And after the bell last night, RH EPS beat estimates. Shares are up 20% in the pre-market. And Cirrus Logic joined the growing list of Apple suppliers, cutting its sales view. Regarding earnings this morning, Toll Brothers revenue beat the highest estimates and HD Supply beat estimates, while look for AutoZone and Dollar General to report around 7 a.m. Wrapping things up, Waste Management was upgraded to buy over at Goldman Sachs. Apple was cut to hold at HSBC as core iPhone business continues to slow. Avery Dennison was upgraded to overweight at KeyBank, and Invesco downgraded to market perform over at Wells Fargo. Live from the First Breaking News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Karen?
All right, thank you, Bill. And to hear live breaking news over your Bloomberg, type squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Donald Trump and First Lady Melania Trump were among the mourners paying their respects to the late President George H.W. Bush as he lies in state in the Capitol Rotunda. The former president will lie in state until services tomorrow at Washington National Cathedral. French Prime Minister Edouard Philippe has just announced the suspension of fuel tax hikes in an effort to appease a protest movement that has radicalized. Philippe, in a TV address, says the anger is that of hard-working people in France. The planned increase provoked riots. In the NBA, the Knicks lost to the Wizards. The Nets lost. The Warriors were winners. In the NFL, the Redskins lost to the Eagles 28-13. In the NHL, the Devils lost. Finally, from Daybreak on the Bloomberg Terminal, what to get the billionaire who has everything? Well, you can have their life documented by researchers, writers, and filmmakers at the Narrative Trust. For $200,000, they'll interview folks in their circle and turn it into an oral history and a book illustrated with historical photographs. And Nathan, I was going to get you this. Oh. If they like opera and they don't want to leave the house, you can get Carmen performed with a full cast and crew and orchestra right in your home for $100,000.
Right?
I gave the surprise
all?
Away. I'm sorry.
You got to be on Santa's really nice list to get some of those items.
Oh, I'm not even getting that slot car set for Christmas. Yeah. No one.
I was feeling good about just getting a tree already. Happy holidays, Michael.
Yeah, happy holidays. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael. Thanks as always. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. It is 6:50 on Wall Street. Time to check what's going on in D.C. Among the top stories in our nation's capital, members of the public will begin to pay their respects to the late George H.W. Bush as the 41st president, as Michael mentioned, lies in state in the Capitol Rotunda. The CEOs of Volkswagen, Daimler, and BMW are expected to be at the White House today to try to head off new auto tariffs. And CIA Director Gina Haspel meets with a small group of senators today to brief them on the killing of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Also making news this morning, the Trump administration struggled to explain the deal that President Trump says he made with China's Xi Jinping at the G20. Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter joins us now. And Kate, we're certainly seeing that struggle play out in the market action this morning. Apparently, investors aren't the only ones who think the administration and the Chinese have some explaining to do.
Yeah, it seems as though the president, as he's, grown accustomed to doing, maybe got a little bit ahead of, where his staff was at the very least with his tweet yesterday saying, pertaining to the auto tariffs that he said he negotiated as part of, his deal with Xi Jinping over the weekend. We then saw Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and other White House advisors coming out and essentially putting qualifications on the president's tweet and walking it back. And Beijing has still not confirmed it, more than 24 hours later. So it's a little bit unclear what exactly, if anything, was agreed to. And this is a bit of a pattern that we've seen with Trump before.
Yeah, as you say, it is a pattern that we've seen from the president before. So given that, how could we see this iteration of the pattern play out?
Well, it may turn out that there was some sort of grain of truth to what Trump said or some sort of grain of accuracy to what was said, but that it may not be to the degree that the president has, initially kind of asserted in his first tweet. And that's, again, something that we've seen in the past. And I think it's hard to tell really whether that's a deliberate approach with Trump or not, or whether, this is part of his negotiating tactic of essentially negotiating through Twitter by saying, this is what was agreed to, and perhaps embellishing that a bit in order to get, Beijing to try to come along.
Yeah, and further exacerbating the lack of clarity this morning and perhaps for the next couple of days is the fact that China essentially doesn't feel as though it can say more because the president, Xi Jinping, is still out of the country.
Exactly. And so, he's still traveling, so that's complicating matters. And also in some ways, I think, provides a bit of a, cover for Chinese officials in order to try to sort out, what exactly they want to say on this matter. It seems, clear at this point, reading between the lines, that they were caught a bit flat-footed by the Trump tweet, certainly didn't expect it, weren't necessarily automatically on the same page. And so, Xi still being abroad gives them a little bit of breathing room in terms of sorting out what they want their statement and their eventual position on what was agreed to be.
All right, let's move on to the other story that seems to perennially hover over Washington, although given the reports this morning, you wonder maybe how much longer with these reports from multiple sources that Special Counsel Robert Mueller is tying up loose ends when it comes to three key players in his investigation.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to hear what more, we obviously heard last week from Michael Cohen, Trump's longtime personal lawyer, who, had some revelations last week that made big news about how deep into negotiating a potential business deal in Moscow the president was during the 2016 campaign through the summer. That's something we didn't know in the past. I think that Cohen is one of the people who we may hear more from in the coming days. And I think there's been a sense that, Mueller might move before the end of the year to wrap up his probe. And if we are to hear more from, Mueller and Manafort and some of these other key players, then I think that raises some serious questions about whether or not Trump and other people in his Trump himself and other people in his inner circle, you know, might soon either be implicated or implicated directly, or we might get more information that, you know, could prompt a congressional response as well heading into January when Democrats are taking control of the House.
Yeah, I guess we might get even more light shed specifically today on former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, with prosecutors set to submit a sentencing memo today.
Yeah, and all of these sort of court filings, you know, I mean, the whole process of, you know, this, you know, the sentencing and the different plea agreements, it can seem a bit arcane, but every time, you know, one of these documents is filed, there are additional details often that are disclosed within the documents. And that's what we saw with Cohen last week. And so there was this sort of major revelation once people had a chance to kind of look at the documents that were submitted. And so I think that there's a sense that that could happen again today with Flynn, you know, in terms of the sentencing agreement. And so I think that people will certainly be waiting for that and looking at it and poring over it very, very, you know, intensely to find out if there's any more additional details that, are, you know, unveiled as part of that.
Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter. Never a shortage of things to watch in the nation's capital. Thanks as always. And you can read more about these stories and more from Washington, D.C. on Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg Terminal. And a reminder that you can follow all the latest on Bloomberg Radio in Washington. Just tune into Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is coming up to 6:56 on Wall Street. It is time for the Bloomberg Small Business Report, and here's John Tucker.
Sources tell us New York's attorney general has opened an investigation into potential abuses by finance firms that offer quick money to small businesses nationwide. The state attorney general, Barbara Underwood's office, is looking into whether merchant cash advance companies engaged in fraud or abused the state court system. That's according to a person familiar with the situation. Last week, the office subpoenaed one of the largest cash advance companies, Yellowstone Capital. Although Underwood's office has been monitoring the cash advance business for some time, it opened a formal investigation last month after Bloomberg published articles about the industry's use of the courts to squeeze small business borrowers. Contractors, truckers, and other small business owners across the country are being bombarded with offers from cash advance companies. These lenders charge interest rates that can exceed 400% on a yearly basis. And that is today's Bloomberg Small Business Report.
All right, John Tucker, thank you. And futures this morning are falling. S&P futures are down 10 points, Dow futures down 122, and NASDAQ futures down 39. This is a day after the S&P 500 gained 1.1%. Stocks are also lower in Europe, with the DAX in Germany down 0.7%. The CAC in Paris and the FTSE 100 are both down about the same. The Nikkei 225 in Japan, it fell down 2.4%, while the Hang Seng in Hong Kong was higher, up 0.3%. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 2.95%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.81%. And NYMEX crude oil up 1.9%, up $1.02 to $53.96 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.4%. It's at $1,244.80 an ounce. And straight ahead, it's Bloomberg Surveillance with Tom Keene and Jonathan Farrow. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.